have heard about, may not have heard about, from maybe some angles and things you haven't considered. That's what we like to do here, and that's the way we try to approach our show. First off, I want to let you guys know, as Micah mentioned, we are live on, going to be live on KPFT, kpft.org, if you want to make a donation. But if you want to follow our work particularly and see what we've been up to for the last decade plus, you can go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com, thehoustonfreethinkers.com, see our faces there, and you can see the archive from our previous shows. We've been off for about a week or a little more, just staying busy around this Thanksgiving holiday, now moving into Christmas time. But there's so much important information, which is why the title for today's show is Neuralink, BlackRock, and Farm Theft in the Netherlands. And that's just a couple of things that out of the list of articles that Micah and I put together for tonight that we could get into. If I listed everything we're going to get into now, it'd be a super long title. But rest assured, we're going to be keeping you informed tonight. For those of you who maybe don't have the time to dig into all these various stories and topics that do affect you, that's one thing, is we always try to come from a solutions perspective. So we're going to start with one big story that I want to start with. We're going to get into some Houston news. We're going to get in big and international. I want to talk about Mexico later. We'll hear what's going on in the Netherlands, farms being taken from people. There's a lot happening, guys. So you are with us now for about the next hour. Let's start with this story, Micah. You might have seen or heard that last week, Elon Musk, his company, Neuralink, they held what they called show and tell. And it was basically their big, unveiling event. Like, he likes to have these events with his companies like Tesla and Apple and others will do. And it was called show and tell. And they were announcing the latest advancements of Neuralink, which Neuralink is their brain implant, neural implant device that they claim on the surface is meant to help the blind see, help people who, can't walk, be able to walk and things like that. They pretty much like promote it as this way to help those in need. That's one thing, right? And this article I put together, I called it Beyond the Hype: How Neuralink Advances the Transhumanist Agenda and Harms Innocent Animals. And this is a 2000 plus word article that I wrote today. So we're not going to be reading the whole thing here, but I'm just going to hit a few key points. One thing I'll start with, if you're looking at this image and wondering, like, what the heck, what kind of weird thumbnail, for those who are watching on screen, what kind of weird thumbnail did they choose for this article? So what you're looking at here on the left side of the image is this brain replica that they use. They did a demonstration to show how they will insert the Neuralink into somebody's brain. And what you're seeing on the right side of the image is the robot that they created specifically for this task, which is called the R1 robot. And so you have this little round device that they say is about the size of a quarter. They showed some images of it, and it has 64 nanothreads connected to it. And this robot, or in within 15 minutes, it threads those 64 needles directly into your brain. So they were doing demonstrations showing how, obviously, they weren't doing it on a human brain or even a real brain. They were just doing it on this kind of replica, and they showed how it looks kind of crazy, Mike. Honestly, it's like this little robot arm going at the brain, like very quickly, and then sticking a little thread and pulling it, and then it does that. And by the end, you get this web of 64 threads that are in your brain, and the implant stays there, and it the skull's closed over it and everything, and you never even know it's there. And you can even charge it wirelessly. Did you know that, Micah? But needless to say, this is last week, November 30th. They were super excited about this. The big announcement being that Elon Musk's company is saying that they are expecting FDA approval to begin human trials within 6 months. Quote, "We have been working hard to get ready for our first human. We want to be extremely careful and certain it will work well before putting a device in a human. We think probably in about 6 months, we should have our first Neuralink in a human." And I just basically went through the 3-hour event. I tried to, I just quoted directly from him and some of the other people from his team, what they were describing, and then tried to look a little bit, deeper than what, not just what they're saying, but also maybe where this is headed, right? And so, for one thing, Elon Musk said that they could, quote, "miniaturize the neural implant to a point where it matches the thickness of the skull that is removed." He compared the brain implant to, quote, "replacing a piece of your skull with a smartwatch." And he said that it's very important that these devices are upgradable because, quote, "you wouldn't want an iPhone 1 stuck in your head if an iPhone 14 is available." And he said that you'll be able to take these out to replace them if it stops working for any reason. I don't know why it would or what that means. And he said, or if you will just want to upgrade to the latest version. And like I said, 64 threads. So I go on here to describe some of this. And what my point with getting into this, like two things. Within days of Musk's show and tell event, Reuters, mainstream news, reported that Neuralink is actually under federal investigation for, quote, potential animal welfare violations. And this is something we've mentioned before. This is related to animal welfare violations. It's accused of testing being rushed, causing needless suffering and deaths of monkeys. That it was reported back as far as February of this year that hundreds of monkeys, I think even maybe as high as thousands at this point, have died in the process of testing out Neuralink. And specifically, like, it's supposed to be pretty brutal, the process that's described. So we knew about that already. There's a group called the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, the PCRM, and they had put out a report back then. They also had announced they were going to file a lawsuit against University of California, Davis, where the Neuralink company's working and having their testing. And so now Reuters, though, is confirming that there's actually a federal investigation going on, and that Neuralink's under investigation for this potential, you know, violation of the Animal Welfare Act. And it says that the federal probe, which has not been previously reported, was opened in recent months by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Inspector General at the request of a federal prosecutor, according to two sources with knowledge of the investigation. They said that they talked to ex-employees. They said that they had audio recordings, emails, and presentations related to this investigation. So that's happening days after. And in fact, whenever Elon Musk announced on Twitter that, in case somebody out there missed it, you know, he's now the owner of Twitter, richest man in the world, these kinds of things. But he actually responds to people on Twitter. So there's a lot of people like, oh, my God, he commented to me. And so I've been tweeting to him, including this story. And the day he announced that he was going to be holding the press conference for this, I said, will there be any comment about the monkeys that have died during the testing? And, you know, people were hearting it and retweeting it, whatever, but he didn't respond. And no, for the 3-hour presentation, they didn't address this situation at all. And Reuters even said that they didn't respond for comment. I also tried to get comment. You know, we're not expecting any comment, but needless to say, they speak for 3 hours about the alleged benefits of how this is going to help the blind and this and that. They don't mention at all that these monkeys that have died and just the situation, the treatment of them, it's pretty disturbing when you read the lawsuit and look into what's happening. So that's one point. And the last thing I'll say in this, and I'd love to get your thoughts, Micah, as well as you out there listening, wherever you're watching, comments, let us know what you're thinking about this whole Neuralink thing. But I wanted to make the end the article by kind of noting that when you really pay attention to what Elon Musk is talking about, I think it's a little bit bigger than just this. We're going to help the blind see. We're going to help the handicapped walk. He said that their goal is to create a, quote, whole brain interface, and that Neuralink needs to read the signals of the brain so that it can know how to, I guess, replicate them and adjust them where needed to give the body the ability to either rework again or to telepathically communicate is one of the things they're working on. They have Neuralink in monkeys now, and these monkeys, they see a highlighted keyboard on the computer, on the screen, and they move the cursor with their mind to spell out things, right? And so they're saying this could help people who are, you know, handicapped, and they might be able to type faster with their mind than anybody with hands can on their phone and things like that. They're promising that. But really, again, a little bit deeper, he says you also want to be able to write the signals. You want to ultimately do that for the entire brain and also extend that to the rest of your nervous system. So I wrote here that the implications of being able to write signals to the brain are worrisome enough when considered beyond the context of helping the blind see or the handicapped walk. Who would decide what signals were written and sent to the brain? What impacts would this have on the nervous system with long-term use? These and other questions were not addressed by Musk and his team. And then he kind of reveals his bigger picture here, that he's saying that his main motivation is, what do we do about AI? And this is his quote, what do we do about artificial general intelligence? If we have a digital superintelligence that's just much smarter than any human, how do we mitigate that risk at a species level? He went on to say that the best case scenario is that AI is very benevolent and humanity is able to, quote, go along for the ride. He said the biggest limitation in going along for the ride and aligning AI is the bandwidth, how quickly you can interact with the computer. We are already cyborgs in a way that your phone and computer are already extensions of yourself. And he basically starts talking about how limited we are with typing with our thumbs or speaking with our voice, and that AI is going to surpass this and that we need to be able to bridge that gap. He says this is the fundamental limitation that I think we need to address to mitigate the long-term risk of AI and also to go along for the ride. So he's really doing this because he does believe that, and he said this before as far back as 2014, he's been warning about the rise of AI, but his belief is that in order to avoid that risk, we need to merge with AI. We need to merge with humanity, where humanity needs to merge with AI machines, which is very much at the root of this transhumanist philosophy. And even in 2017, he spoke at the World Government Summit where he said, I do think there's a path to having some sort of merger of biological intelligence and machine intelligence. And the finally, the end of the article, I just remind the reader that, you know who else calls for these things? Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum, the Fourth Industrial Revolution. They talk about very similar ideas that he's calling for, like wearable devices, implantable devices, universal basic income, AI, asking about whether man should merge with machine. Klaus Schwab telling reporters, at first, we'll implant these devices in our clothes, and then we could imagine that we'll implant them in our brains or in our skin. And in the end, maybe there'll be a direct communication between our brain and the digital world. What we will see is a kind of fusion of the physical, digital, and biological world. So interesting, just those connections, and whether or not people will accept this, I guess time will tell, but they're 6 months, Micah. They're going to be testing this on human brains in 6 months if they're not already.
Well, I guess if it's volunteer, that's one thing, right? If you want your brain to have whatever on it, in it, and through it, I guess that's your bodily autonomy and et cetera, right? And I guess to answer some of the questions about like who will do it, if it was like that, I guess other than perhaps some animal torture, I don't see any real reason morally to get in the way of it, right? Because if people want to do that and it's an agreement between them and their brain stitcher upper or implanter, then so be it. And I know Mr. Musk, he likes to kind of be presented, or maybe he doesn't like it, but he comes out being presented sort of like, tell me if this is a misrepresentation, sort of like a guy who built his own self up. Like that seems to be the mythos around him, correct? And I can't hear you,
I was saying that is the mythos for sure, with the emphasis on myth.
And the reason I'd like to go here is this isn't entirely true, but you know, at the same way that's being perpetuated, here he is, and I'm sure if pressed on it, he'd say, "Oh, I was, you know, using a metaphor." You said that portion about we're already cyborgs because of our phone. Well, I don't know. According to you, maybe I'm just being a little bit too legalistic here, or taking words at their meaning. But according to Oxford Language Dictionary, a fictional or hypothetical person whose physical abilities are extended beyond normal human limitations, and here's the key, by mechanical elements built into the body. My phone isn't in my body yet, Mr. Musk. I don't know what you've been doing with yours, but mine is not in my body. And, you know, as long as that's still a choice, you know, Mr. Musk can do whatever he wants over there with his phone.
No, I agree. I agree with that. Generally speaking, like, you know, and this is something I've posed to the audience at different times. Like, everybody knows we're believers in bodily autonomy and individual liberty. So people have that right and that ability to do so. But I think also, well, in addition to that, we also still need, there needs to be a conversation about just considering the ways it's going to impact our world around us. Like, you know, and with, I've had this example for years because I had a friend back in the day who years ago was already on transhumanism, and a libertarian who considers himself like still a transhumanist at the same time. And he was saying, you know, in the marketplace of say ideas, or if we were to go out there and try to apply for the same job, and I install like a camera in my eye, some kind of contact lens, and I'm able to go tell the boss that, hey, you can watch me through my lens here all day. You'll have a record. It'll be streamed directly to your, you know, emailed to you every day at the end of my shift, or you can tune in live at this address and see exactly what I'm doing. That he was like, I'm going to get the job over you and your organic human self, right? And so I think things like that, in addition to people who want to augment their body and who want to try to change their, not just their like merging with machines, but we've talked about this before too, Micah, the gene editing going to that direction, right? There's going to be all kinds of different ways that people try to augment and change themselves, and without even getting into potential arguments about what that might do to somebody in the long term, mentally, physically, even spiritually, I say people have that right to do so, but it will still affect the way we interact and live with each other. I mean, we might start existing in different realities, right? The people who are augmenting themselves are going to be probably gravitating towards each other. Some of them might augment themselves to be faster than us, or to, you know, jump higher, all kinds of different advantages.
Certainly. And they may have some disadvantages, like those mosquitoes we've been talking about, you know, those mosquitoes, where they introduced all those male mosquitoes that could do things the other male mosquitoes couldn't do, but then they kind of destroyed the female mosquito's life. So the female mosquitoes didn't want to be with them anymore. Maybe that's what'll happen to some of these people. I don't know. Maybe they'll just have, you know, the advantages that they have by you know, getting or using that. And you're right. I do believe that's a conversation that will be had. You know, what point does it get to where if you don't have your kid with this or that installed in them, are you an unfit parent, right? You know, that's where it really starts getting invasive, because before then, we're just speaking about some sort of, you know, oh, I've got the choice to do this. I am going to see better. You know, I am going to, I don't know, have an extra gigabyte of memory, you know, or whatever it might be. I can see lots of people making those choices. And, you know, I have very little to say to get in the way of those choices. But when it turns into, oh, you don't have electricity, so we're going to come send CPS in. You don't have your kid, you know, you don't have your kid at the bare minimal of memory storage, you know, therefore you can't have your kids anymore. And the state's going to come in and make sure they're, you know, optimized or whatever. That's where, and I don't know that we're going that way necessarily, but you do hear it, Mr. Musk saying that that's an ought, like almost a moral imperative on it, right? That we need to, that's the next step. And he doesn't seem like he's just saying, I need to. He's not like saying, gee, guys, you know, I got all this money and it's really cool. I got fast cars and everything, but you know, I want to be able to, you know, fly like Superman. I want to be able to do these things. He's not doing that. He's saying like, there's the whole collective that, you know, the greater humanity needs, not just wants and the benefits of helping the blind and all of that, which, you know, we got to have a question there on whether saving the sight for the blind is worth torturing monkeys. You know what I'm saying?
There's a few conversations in this whole thing. That's why I encourage anybody who wants to read it. I just posted the link wherever you're watching from. You can see it over at The Last American Vagabond. It's called Beyond the Hype, Neuralink, How It Advances the Transhumanist Agenda and Causing Harm to Animals. So check that one out. I know we got a lot more to cover. Micah, do you want to dive into some of these local stories next? I got them pulled up if you want to go there.
Well, let's just kind of get into this one, and I'll do it fastly, about the family of the Harris County jail inmate. And then one of the reasons I wanted to get in this isn't so much about the particular case. And I'm sorry to say that. I mean, we've been through so many particular cases, right, Derek? But this individual is 48, had head and facial injuries, and hooked up to a machine at Ben Todd Hospital. The Harris County Sheriff's Office said the injuries are from a fall off his bed. Okay. Loved ones were, you know, they didn't believe this. His common-law wife, his mother-in-law, they just don't believe he fell out of bed onto his face. I don't know about you. You ever fallen out of bed on your face? Anybody out there falling out of bed on their face?
Is that what they're claiming?
Yes.
And then that's the guy right there, the image that's on screen, that's him?
Yes.
That's from falling out of the bed.
Yes. But it continues. Wow. There's a little bit more beat down going on, though. We'll get a little bit further. So in the beginning, it started with him just falling out of bed, right? And so they said, well, he fell out of bed. And so then he had to be taken to medical. And at that time, I guess he got mouthy or hostile with an officer and got a little bit of more trouble. On November 25th, he was leaving the medical clinic. The sheriff's office says he became combative and tried to hit a detention officer. Garcia fell to the ground and hit his head. So his loved ones didn't even find out that he was hospitalized for 3 days. And here's the part that I kind of thought we should get into. You know, I think that's questionable, right? There's a lot of questionable stuff there. The story doesn't go too far into it, but let's get a little bit further, because I want to link this to a bigger picture. This comes at a time of increase in deaths at the Harris County Jail. With a month left to go, there have been 21 this year, and that's more than all of last year and more of each of the 2 years before. So we got more people dying in jail than ever. It turns out, and this is the part, if Garcia doesn't make it, he will not be in the count. So he won't be number 22. Turns out that the Walker County, where he had a warrant for, which is why he got pulled in and arrested, they basically no longer are they released the warrant, so he's no longer in custody. So he won't be counted. And I start to wonder, politically, as things go up, how many releasing of the warrants will they have? How many people's warrants were released that died? How many or had, you know, injuries in jail or, you know, some sort of abuse? I don't know. It's curious. But, yeah, that's the latest there. I don't want to dwell on it too long. Just, you know, these things don't stop happening, and
they it's been don't.
A remarkable year for it.
Yeah, man. I just asking those who are watching if you know, for those who could see, if it looked like that man fell out of bed. I think the answer is obvious. It does not appear that he fell out of his bed. But and as you said, these stories they're kind of more common than we would like in Houston and Texas in general. And we got another little bit of news related to Texas. I saw you pulled up that I think is worth mentioning and get into for a moment or two. This prisoner swap, this prisoner release that we have from Russia.
Yeah, I wanted to get into this, and I've only done so much research on it, but I do think it's a very interesting thing. Maybe it's not our usual subject here. I don't think this is the usual thing we touch on. But when I saw all the media coming out and praising it and saying how great it was, it just smacked of some propaganda. I mean, maybe that's just me. And so I started digging deeper into it, right? And I picked this article because it says divided, right? So I thought it would give me some kind of diverse opinions rather than just how wonderful it is. Because to me, maybe I'm thinking more like a little strategy game playing kid or something. You know, you play Risk, you play some sort of game. You play a game called Empires and War and Politics or something and play that stuff on the real 3D. Think about it. I mean, they traded the Lord of War arms dealer. They traded an arms dealer for a basketball player. I mean, like, I don't know if you're playing the game, you're sitting around the table, are you going to have a little smirk on your face when you just got an arms dealer? I mean, there's that aspect of it, you know? If they had just made it like it was an independent prisoner release or something like that, but it's called a swap, okay? So that makes it a deal. And I have to say, I don't think Brittany Griner should be in prison anywhere for what she did. But with that being said, I don't think anyone should be in prison for wearing shoes in a house. But if I go to a house where everyone takes their shoes off, I'm probably going to take my shoes off, even if I wear my shoes in my house, which I don't. But you get the point. And I feel like as an American, she's traveling to another country. If I went to Saudi Arabia, I'm not going to take a fifth of whiskey to the airport. I just think that if she wanted to get that, she should have got that there. You know,
I think what you're saying is it's important to know the customs and the lay of the land when you're going somewhere else, right? Like she claims, for those who don't know, she was arrested in Russia she had just a dab pen or something like that, cannabis pen,
it was cartridges.
Yeah, things like that, right? So not even like actual flower of cannabis or something. And
in states where it's not legal, that is more prohibited than flour.
Yeah, well, because it's the oil. Well, either way, she said that she didn't realize it was there, whether that was her cover story or, you know, true or not. That's what she told the Russians. But she also pled guilty and admitted, yes, this was mine. I just didn't mean to bring it. And so, yeah, they take it a lot more seriously than maybe some parts of the U.S. do anymore. Some parts of the U.S. still lock you up, including Texas in some areas. But my general point is that people do need to pay mind to where you're going. So, for example, I live in Mexico now, and I know that realistically the rules for journalists are a little bit different in Mexico than they are in the U.S. And same thing that you mentioned, Saudi Arabia, it has a lot less press freedom. You would be probably silly and maybe risking your life to go to a country like that and just think you could report as widely and boldly and openly as maybe you can in other places. Like the U.S., that is one thing that maybe some of us might take for granted. There are other places where you will be blackbagged. You'll disappear. Or, for example, in Mexico, if you write about the wrong gang or cartel, you might get shot at. You know, you might, if you try to expose certain government corruption and you miss the wrong people, they will retaliate. Now, I think that does happen in the U.S. We have journalists die in mysterious circumstances, but it's less out in the open. It's kind of more, I think, covert. So anyways, you're right, Micah. Like, either way, you don't have to agree with her being locked up or anything like that, or anybody should be in prison for victimless crime. But I do think it's smart to know, okay, I'm going to another place. I got to realize whatever the rules are of that area and how they run things so I don't end up, you know, locked up for 8 months. That sucks.
And I kind of got one more thing to say on it. And this is the fact that if you landed in one of those rule your life states and you couldn't have whatever she had, if you couldn't have that, they would be like, you know, lock her up, lock them up. And they wouldn't be on here saying, oh, she's free. It's a wonderful thing. You know, like if she landed in a plane in a state that's like, we don't love freedom. We don't want to give you bodily autonomy. We don't let you do these things. She'd be locked up on a federal charge somewhere and the state charge as well. And everybody would act like it was, you know, what was to be expected. But instead, you know, you got Biden and Kamala Harris up there saying, look how wonderful it is. You know, it'd be wonderful if we got rid of that type of zero tolerance that she experienced in Russia here. I mean, that's the part that I don't understand. They're like, oh,
hypocrisy.
Yeah, half the states are a little bit less. You would get you would maybe not go to a penal colony, but you might get 8 years. So, I mean, I'm just saying, they put people in longer.
People's lives are still ruined in the United States for the criminal justice system over cannabis, over victimless drug crimes, whether or not you endorse or want people to use drugs or that's your path or not. The point is people who are literally committing no violence and may have an addiction or some other struggle or just freely choose to, you know, put substances in their body because that's their right to do so, just like it's your right to say no to a certain health treatment or no to you know, anything because it's your bodily autonomy. We don't think people should be locked up for that. And that doesn't mean you have to condone the actions or the drug use or anything like that to see that it's not a good use of resources. It's just violence. It doesn't lead to helping people in need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. So I think that was the big takeaway, seeing all the cheering of it. If you cheer it, then don't accept locking people up for it here. Like, come on, let's get a little bit straight. You know, let's get our house a little bit in order. And I don't know what I think about the other guy. I looked him up. He supposedly was convicted of wanting to kill Americans and all this. But guess what? He had all kinds of degrees and worked in the government over in Russia and stuff. So they're really glad to have him back, man. So I'm not really sure how much was true about what he was convicted of. And I'm not even going to speculate that it wasn't because I barely understood the guy. But he definitely was what I would call pro. Like, she's a pro basketball player. He's a pro arms dealer. Not your little.
Seems like the U.S. got the short end of the stick.
Yeah, we're just playing a war game thing here with no feelings or anything. And if you want to talk about this, maybe two more minutes, there was another aspect. I do not know because I don't want to be a statist of much any stripe. But I'd like to think for a moment, what does it mean to be a member of a collective? What does it mean to be a citizen? Does that mean that your government should try to get you out of other prisons? Okay. I mean, do we get anything for paying all this stuff and bleeding all this stuff for them? And that sort of question. And I think that's actually a very relevant question because we've seen that in our nation's history. The whole, you know, Thomas Jefferson and the Barbary pirates who were basically kidnapping American sailors and such, you know, how do we deal with that? What kind of expectation, what type of role of the government do you see for people who are in foreign lands? Should someone be brought back here and say maybe tried for the crime that they were held over there for? And if it's not against our laws, obviously let go free. Maybe wearing a certain pin could get you in trouble in like a more authoritarian regime, right? Say we get you out. Okay, well, that's you didn't do anything against our philosophy or our ethic. In fact, you were spreading freedom of speech. Yeah, that's basically that whole American world revolution thing, right? We want the world to be more free that way, right? So, you know, you're no big deal. But let's say they'd shot someone. Do they come over here and be charged for manslaughter or something? Or should they have to pay, you know, what it costs to get them out? I don't know. I don't think most of the time we think about these things, but it is a recurring thing. We have people in prisons all around the world, you know? So what does it mean to be a citizen? Just because you may not be a statist doesn't mean that this stuff doesn't mean anything and they are taking tax money and we can still put pressure on them whether we agree with them being there or not. So that's all I got to say about that one.
Yeah, I think it does bring up some interesting points. I'll just say a thing or two so we can move forward. But I think most of our audience probably be the kind of people that don't even like the term citizen, right? And would even say like, oh, I'm not owned by the state or the government, things like that. But I do think probably when push comes to shove and somebody's in a Brittany Griner situation or like you said, some other situation caught up in another country, especially if it's some known authoritarian, you know, less freedom friendly country, that people are probably hopeful or thinking, oh, I'll be safe. The US would never let one of their citizens rot over here in prison. That looks bad, right? Surely they're going to, you know, argue for me, and they'll get, you know, a prisoner release will happen in a year or two or something. Like, you know, they typically do those things. I would argue that probably people do expect, especially those who pay taxes and do it with, whether begrudgingly or not, that feel like, I'm paying into the system, so I'm going to get things back, you know? And so this maybe is, like you said, one of those things they might, whether consciously or unconsciously, expect. If I am ever caught up in some other foreign country, the government's going to come save my ass if I need it. You know, like, maybe that's what some people kind of assume or believe. You guys, you're listening to Live Free, Think Free. I got one more story before we cut to a music break. Probably have you for another half hour here. Again, our website is thehoustonfreethinkers.com. We've been broadcasting since summer 2011.
Yeah, and if you are in Houston and you see City Hall lit up red, white, and blue, just know they're appropriating the story of Brittany Garner to spread more red, white, and blueness on you.
Yep, spreading the red, white, and blue everywhere. Visit us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You can find Live Free, Think Free on Spotify, on all those other places you might listen to music. And we're also all over the Conscious Resistance channels. You can find the archives of our previous shows. Now, this one I just want to mention in passing, at least, because the ongoing saga of Julian Assange, which has not gotten any better in recent memory, shy of Elon Musk put a poll on Twitter saying, should Snowden and Assange be pardoned? And it was up for a little while, and people, you know, it got overwhelmingly vote yes. Now, will that have any effect in the real world? I doubt it. But so it's getting some discussion. But this was a little bit unusual. It happened about 10 days ago. Major newspapers, including The Guardian, The New York Times, and other media outlets, specifically media outlets who have benefited from WikiLeaks leaks, they got to write award-winning stories in the 2010s and 2012, 13, up until Trump era, where it became not a good thing to support WikiLeaks, and all of a sudden they were right-wing Russian liars and fake news and things like that. But finally, after all these years, these outlets decided to grow some spine and speak up. Now, I don't think they should get too much credit for it after all this time, but they did indeed publish a letter together saying, quote, the indictment of Julian Assange sets a dangerous precedent and threatens to undermine America's First Amendment and freedom of press. The five major media outlets that collaborated with WikiLeaks in 2010 to publish explosive stories based on confidential diplomatic cables from the U.S. State Department sent a letter calling on the Biden administration to drop all charges against Julian Assange, who has been in the high security London prison, Belmarsh prison, for more than 3 years and then locked up even before that at the embassy. And it's been a long saga. Those stories were known collectively as Cablegate. Then you had the Iraq war logs, the Afghan war logs. And the letter reads, 12 years after the publication of Cablegate, it is time for the U.S. government to end its prosecution of Julian Assange for publishing secrets, reads the letter signed by the editors and publishers of The New York Times, The Guardian, Le Monde, Der Spiegel, and El País. Publishing is not a crime. The letter comes, again, as Assange is currently fighting extradition to the U.S., where he will face charges under the 1917 Espionage Act and could potentially be put in prison for hundreds of years. Literally, they're trying to put him away that long, or even potentially sentenced to death if they are able to get their way. Some of these politicians have been calling for that, and some of these ex-intelligence officials. But yeah, I just wanted to make that note. Keep it in your mind. He's still locked up. This is still going on. And that, yeah, we are at the 10-year anniversary, 12-year anniversary of these leaks that did change the way people understood the war on terror at that time. There was a lot of pushback in relation to 9/11 and other situations, but most Americans were still in this like, no, we need to fight the terrorists because of 9/11, it's keeping us safe. And then all of a sudden, because of Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning, WikiLeaks, these videos come out showing them machine gunning people from the top of helicopters, right, and laughing about it. And they also showed the private cables, show communication between different politicians, showing that the war was not going the way they were claiming publicly, all kinds of revelations. And if you don't know anything about that, I do encourage you to read this article. This is coming from Common Dreams. It does link to a few of the previous stories, and you know, it leads to some places if you miss that whole point, or if you've just joined us the last couple of years and maybe don't really fully understand the level that WikiLeaks did help spread truth. So that's just something to take note of. It's happening out there. I don't know why the mainstream decided to, you know, be courageous for a moment. I think it's kind of maybe more of a show. They're just, or maybe they don't, they're like, you know what? Our legacy is going to be totally tarnished if it's not already, if we stay silent on this one. We can't let this pass without at least trying to, you know, okay, let's put together a little letter and we'll sign our names on it. So be it, right?
We can't have any of us get in trouble after this.
Yeah, it's like, we got to look good. We haven't said anything in the whole time, but we'll sign a letter here at the end. All right, guys, I'm going to play a quick song. We're going to come back. We got some more stories. We talked Elon Musk and Neuralink already. What else is on the way? We got BlackRock. We got Mike has got an Epstein story. The Washington Post is encouraging you to eat bugs again. Netherlands is buying out farmers. We're probably not going to get to all these again, but there's some good stuff coming up, so please stay tuned. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free. And once again, I'm going to premiere a brand new song from my upcoming album that I haven't played anywhere else. It's called It's Getting Dark Out, and you're hearing it first here on Live Free, Think Free. It's part of my upcoming album called Transmutation, which should be out by Christmas, if not by New Year's for sure. So check this out. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free. We'll be right back.
I ain't giving up, man. I ain't going out like that. But it's getting dark out, and now I'm feeling lost right now. I ain't giving up, man. I ain't going out like that. But it's getting dark out, and now I'm feeling lost right now. There's somewhere better for me, and I can feel it on the inside. The water's calling to me, and I'm giving in to the tide. There's never been a better time to not be me. It feels like I'm fading, gone before you see. Nah, it's just another night that I'm stuck in this skin, and I don't feel much like me, yet here I am again. Steady staring in the mirror like I don't know my own reflection. The voice is taunting me, but I'm just trying to forget them. So sick of this pretending I'm fine when I'm not. Fuck. You can keep smiling and lying while I rot. I ain't giving up, man. I ain't going out like that. But it's getting dark out, and now I'm feeling lost right now. I ain't giving up, man. I ain't going out like that. But it's getting dark out, and now I'm feeling lost right now. You ever feel like you're at your lowest low, but you didn't even know? You had so much lower to sink, your pride now extinct. Now you only got one stop before you hit the bottom rock. I promise it only goes up from here unless your path isn't clear. But me, I'm gonna get my mind right and climb out this hole. My physical body's been abandoned and left without a soul. I can't even feel it enough to know if I'm still alive. And there's no time or space, but something tells me I will survive. I will make it through anything you throw at me. All this pain is only preparation for greatness. I ain't giving up, man. I ain't going out like that. But it's getting dark out, and now I'm feeling lost right now. I ain't giving up, man. I ain't going out like that. But it's getting dark out, and now I'm feeling lost right now. I ain't giving up, man. I ain't going out like that. But it's getting dark out, and now I'm feeling lost right now. I ain't giving up, man. I ain't going out like that. But it's getting dark out, and now I'm feeling lost right now.
All right. Welcome back to Live Free, Think Free. That was my latest song under the name 33. It's called It's Getting Dark Out. Hope you guys enjoyed that. Coming soon on my new album, Transmutation. If anybody's curious about that, you can find all my music. If you search 33 is here on YouTube, Odyssey, Spotify, those kind of places, you'll find me. And yeah, I'll be playing more music as we go forward. So yeah. Thank you guys for letting me share that. Let's go ahead and jump into our next stories. We got
for quite sure, a bit. Derek, let me just go ahead and say one thing real quick. It's great to have the music that you've been bringing in different genres. And I really like that song. It's got a good vibe, good atmosphere. But I also want to urge people out there. We've been playing. We've had guests in the studio playing music live, no less than a few dozen times at this point. We've had call-ins from platinum level recording artists. We've had just all kinds of diverse acts come through here. So if you know an act that you think fits with our show, reach out to us. Message Live Free, Think Free. Send us a CD. Send us a link, and we'll get into it. We play what we like because we're commercial free. We are not obligated to a playlist or to anyone. That's why we can talk about things and take some of your input here and talk about that. So, yeah, I just want to make sure that we stay open because we have received many music gifts, I will say, from the world, giving us music. So I want to make sure we stay open to that and thankful for KPFT to the opportunity to play so much great music on the radio.
Absolutely. All right, let's move forward. Once again, our website is thehoustonfreethinkers.com. If you want to find us there, check out our previous shows. I wanted to mention one thing just in passing. I haven't even had time to dive into it, but it's happening as we're recording this show. The so-called Twitter files, part two, have started to be released. These, of course, have come from Elon Musk, we talked about earlier, who I do not have great feelings about. But since taking the helm at Twitter, has called for the release of the so-called Twitter files, showing how the former employees and members of Twitter were silencing and censoring people during the lead up to the 2020 election, as well as just targeting people. And so the latest part one,
they said, I'm sorry to take us back, but did you see both parties had access? They showed that one party had like 99% of the function, but both parties had access. They were using that stuff together to try to control the narrative. I'm just putting it
out. Yeah, it's important for people to know that. So this second part, though, is focused on Twitter's secret blacklist. That's all I really want to say about this. There's 30 tweets from Barry Weiss of Free Press that you can find. Her account is BARIWEISS at Barry Weiss, and started tweeting this whole tweet thread about an hour ago. And there's a whole bunch of info. So it's focused, though, now on blacklists that former employees had, specifically made blacklists about specific accounts and topics and keywords. And it's showing some of the accounts that they are targeting. So there's definitely more information coming forward worth checking out, especially if you've someone who has suffered from shadow banning, which people still try to say is a conspiracy, despite the fact that we've had document leak after document leak over the past years, including from Project Veritas and others, showing Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc., specifically target keywords or specific accounts and downrank them and downgrade them, or show make it where they basically can't grow, can't be seen by new people. It's
which is real. Another reason I like being on radio. We talked the number of times during the COVID, whatever, how great it was that we could still talk about things that you were being removed from YouTube and other places for talking about.
Yeah, it does happen, which is sometimes surprising considering. But yeah, so check that out at Barry Weiss on Twitter, Twitter Files Part 2. Check it out. Now, we got another one here. Micah, is this my story or your story, this Epstein
one? It's not my story, but I dug into it after you threatened me with it last time. I guess what it is, I had to look up Leon Black. Do you know much about
him? It's interesting. I started to look into him after this came out. This is now that some of the names of different alleged clients of Epstein have been named, now there's lawsuits coming. There's more lawsuits coming forward, and this is dealing with this billionaire Leon Black.
Yeah, I guess that's the sum of it. That I think you just really hit the main thing. No point getting into the details about the victim, but yeah, another rich, powerful, person is now being accused of, improper behavior, for lack of a better word, and violence against an individual in relation to Epstein. So when you see these people and think that they don't have anything to do with it, I'm not saying they do, but.
Well, and I think the thing here with Leon Black is he was involved, if I remember correctly, he's either the involved with the estate of Jeffrey Epstein, or he was connected to Epstein. Obviously, that's why he's being accused here. But it does say that we're looking now on screen at the actual complaint, the court complaint that was filed just a couple of weeks ago, this preliminary statement. It says, in the spring of 2002, on a weekday in the late afternoon, Miss Pearson was raped by Leon Black. Black's brutal attack took place in a secluded and private area where no one could see or hear her scream. And it goes on from there. But so, yeah, more developments in that.
he was the chair of MoMA. You know, that's the thing about these things. The chair of the museum, he's has $372 billion invested in credit, had all kinds of things going on. So, you know, you gotta wonder, I don't know. You know, does their weird behavior get limited to while they're hanging out with Epstein? I don't know. When you look at the things he's worked with, like the Carlyle Group, you ever heard of that? these people don't seem like, at least this guy doesn't seem to be that, you know, yeah, he's out there in all kinds of stuff and he's doing some philanthropic stuff. But at the same time, he's not, Epstein is one of the shady things he's touching. So I don't know. And maybe that's one of the things that'll happen. Just like the Twitter files being released, you know, things that we just kind of in general suspected, we're not going to be able to change the government influencing social media, are we? I mean, maybe I'm just too jaded, but we know, and we now can, and more people can know, it's documented. And I think that's kind of how this is, you know?
I worry if it's accepted, though, to some degree, you know?
Yeah, maybe we won't get every pederast and every rapist that hung out with some, I don't know what to even call him. I mean, what kind of agent was he? Do you think he was a free agent? I don't know. But, I mean, they don't let us believe he was a private intelligence, you know, type guy. But, yeah. And then you got to wonder also, do you think that there'll be – so there's a lot of rich, powerful people who were playing bad games with Mr. Epstein. But does that mean every rich, powerful person was? But I do think what happens is if you're a rich, powerful person and you hang out with someone like that and you start to see that there's a certain personality, you might not want to be around because there's other personalities who will make up stories to sue you and take your money. So who knows what's real on that? But I'm not too surprised. The guy's in a lot of strange things. Yeah, he's in a lot of philanthropic things. I can't accuse. I don't know. It's all hearsay to me.
Yeah, we don't know at the moment. And that's the thing is, you know, we can make assumptions. We know what the Epstein network is connected to. And it was a huge network. And I encourage anybody who's not familiar with that, you can visit my website, theconsciousresistance.com. I have a whole category, whole section of reports that we've done here on this show that I've done over the years focused on the Epstein network, the larger connections to other important folks. And it's a deep rabbit hole. So I encourage you to check that out. Now I want to go to another important story. This one is, it's a big one. We're not going to.
Can I say one more thing? The problem is that Epstein is going to want to move in all those circles. You know, like, I'm sorry, let's think about it. He's going to want to move in all those circles. He's going to want to touch all those people and not just in that way. He's like, it's in the nature of such a socialite. How else is he going to find clients? So. Sorry, man.
All right. It's all good. I'm trying to move forward. Okay. So this next story I want to talk about is related to BlackRock. And this is a big one. We're not going to have time to dive fully into it and explain everything. But thankfully, it's been written into a 3-part article by James Corbett that's been released over the last month or so. And if you don't know the name BlackRock, especially, then you need to read this series. It's not definitive, so it's not going to be everything ever, you know, that we're ever going to need to know about them. But if you have no idea who BlackRock is and these type of big companies like Blackstone, BlackRock, James gets into the confusion for one about those, why those names are so similar and where that came from. And also the Vanguard Group is another one that more and more people are becoming curious about. These are these huge financial holding companies that when you look at who owns Walmart, Coca-Cola, Moderna, Exxon, Amazon, you actually get into the shares. Vanguard Group is at the very top and BlackRock's right underneath them. And there's, you know, a few other companies, but these two collectively own so much of the world around us. And James's series is pretty much just like the first one's like a history of where did BlackRock come from. Gets into some people connected to Lehman Brothers and a lot of the same players we've seen over financial crimes over the years. So I encourage you to check that out just to get to like the background of who is this company, how they're related to anything going on now. But the second one I think is probably most important to the things we've been talking about today. And that is just that Larry Fink, who's BlackRock's CEO, who's also a partner sitting on the board of the World Economic Forum, works with Klaus Schwab, et cetera, that his organization, that they pretty much have been leading the way to what James talks about in the third system, which is this AI system called Aladdin that they're claiming now is going to be able to handle money and investments in a way that we've never seen before, while at the same time they're controlling mass amounts of like up to 30 to 40% of the entire global economy. It just gets into some really interesting things here and how this connects to ESG stuff and social credit. But the one thing I do want to mention that is pretty intriguing is how you can see that there was definitely some direction coming from BlackRock. I can't say for certain that Larry Fink said do this and everybody else listened, but James does point out how there was a meeting that took place in August 22nd of 2019, which of course is before COVID. It's also before the Event 201 event. And there was a meeting of these bankers. This meeting came shortly after Larry Fink had written this piece calling for this is the new direction the financial sector needs to go to. He called it the going direct reset. And Micah, you would have a better understanding than much of this than I think I do. But James does a pretty good job of explaining it as well. But the point that he gets to is that the way he describes it is this current two-circuit system that we have where historically speaking, the Federal Reserve was never able to, quote, print money. In the sense that people understand the term. It's able to create reserve money, which banks keep on deposit with the Fed. The more reserves they have parked at the Fed, the more money the bank has, they're allowed to conjure into existence and bring into the real economy. But he's talking about how these two things were separate from like real money, quote unquote, real money, and in the Federal Reserve money. But what Larry Fink called for and what BlackRock essentially pushed for the rest of the major corporations to start moving in direction of was the end of that. And they called it the going direct reset. They said that this was basically one of the last financial tools that the major central bankers have. Here it is. They're talking about the four co-authors of this report. Three of them were former central bankers themselves, including the former president of Swiss National Bank, former Federal Reserve vice chair, and former governor of Bank of Israel, former deputy governor of Bank of Canada. And this is where they put this idea of going direct and getting, you know, again, I encourage you to read the article because it'll do a better job of explaining it than I am currently right now. But it's important to see that once again, there is direction happening. There are people who are making decisions behind the scenes and in powerful places that aren't government. These types of institutions like BlackRock. And then James ends his series by looking at this Aladdin AI thing that they're talking about. But the kind of last thing he asks is like, well, who owns BlackRock then? And of course, he shows the picture of the financial holdings of Walmart, Coca-Cola, Moderna, Exxon again, and you see who's above them. It's Vanguard. The Vanguard Group owns BlackRock. And then, of course, the question is, well, who's the Vanguard Group and who owns them? And that's James kind of hints at that's going to be a new series of articles he'll work on in the future. But it's just this endless rabbit hole of companies like this. And a lot of them, you know, they do work with the Klaus Schwabs and the Henry Kissingers of the world, but they're also, I doubt that most people are paying too much attention to the BlackRocks of the world. As Seth here mentions, Whitney Webb has done a great job writing about BlackRock. James has done a great job here as well. I think more people are starting to think about this. I saw a documentary come out recently called Monopoly that was talking about these kind of financial holding companies and how much they are influencing the world. But it was definitely not something that's been on my radar prior to COVID, I'll admit. Is this something, Mike, have you heard of this going direct reset? The only person I ever heard talk about it previously was Catherine Austin Fitz and Solari Report.
I think we first started talking about BlackRock maybe 3-4 years ago, a little bit before COVID. And then more and more through COVID, because if you remember, the Fed isn't really allowed to mess in certain markets, but they could indirectly through BlackRock with like Fed funds and even taxpayer money. So they BlackRock used that to bail out their own ETFs. See what I'm saying? And meanwhile, like,
you know, that's what James is saying in there. Exactly.
If you don't think BlackRock is getting, and so I remember us talking a little bit about those, right? I remember because I was really, I think that whole awareness that they were manipulating the stock market now, not just bailing out, you know, GM or Ford or the banksters, but actually, you know, manipulating the market by buying up stock and you know, think about it. The insiders know what's happening with that, right? So they know when to pump and dump. But then there was a little bit more that happened for example, to mix them with the government a little bit more. They managed like $500 million of government retiree plans. So, I mean, they're just all over everything. And yeah, these companies, all companies kind of are made with that capacity to own other companies. And, you know, those companies could have different boards, you know, different real entity owners mixed in with companies owning them. So it is a big mess. And BlackRock, I think anytime you start seeing these companies do things that used to not be allowed, if it isn't something that just creates more freedom with like doesn't create more danger for people, maybe you could think of a few that used to not be allowed that are now allowed. But when they're allowed to do things in the financial market that it had already put regulations in place for, like the separation of the investment banks and asset holding banks. When that broke down, the Glass-Steagall Act, you see these different things. It's just like you were saying about the transhumanism. You have to have the conversation because now the economic situation's changed. And I think that's what BlackRock is. They came in, you know, yeah, they're a company. Yeah, they're making money, but they're also moving an agenda. They're moving the conversation and they're in their way. You know, they have to justify how, you know, like back with the bailouts, it was too big to fail, right? During COVID, the COVID collapse, if we don't shore up these companies, blah, 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 you know? And I think the one thing to show is this is so much government interference mixed with, you know, the capital, you know, and what do you hear Klaus Schwab talking about? The elite capital and the government deciding what's best for people, you know, not everyone else. I think that that's what we need to start seeing, that that's what is happening with this stuff. I mean, I don't know what we can do about it. I just know it changes the economy. It changes the stock market. You think the stock market's real? You think those numbers are real? You think you're really investing in a company that, whether its product flies or not out there, is going to make you money or not? Look how much more it's being played with now. You can still make money in it, but recognize that it's not a free stock market even.
It's all an illusion. I mean, it's so hard to trust any of it. We got a few more minutes here left. I wanted to mention just one real quick, Micah, and you know, you had quite a few when it comes to the economy, and we got this Fed one pulled up, so let me know what you want to focus on. But this one, just really briefly wanted to mention, because this came right before, or I think right after Thanksgiving. Washington Post, salted ants, ground crickets, why you should try edible insects. And, you know, the reason I'm highlighting this just for a moment is because this is one of the quote unquote conspiracy theories that's going around. And I mean that in a loving way, like that you'll know what I mean, that there are people claiming because the World Economic Forum and others are floating this idea that for the good of the environment, we all need to stop eating meat. And that might include protein from bugs and insects, which they absolutely have written about and talked about. And yes, there are cultures living today, including in Mexico where I'm at, where people do eat certain bugs or things like that, that in other places like the US, people turn their nose up. It's a nuanced conversation.
You eat bugs while you're down there?
I'm not. No, not me personally.
Not even accidentally.
No, it's funny because like when we went on a hike, and everybody who we were on the hike with is aware of Klaus Schwab and this whole thing. And someone was like, oh, you want to try them out? They're called chapulin. They're like these little bugs, and everybody's just like, nah, bro, not me. And like, and again, I'm a vegan too, and so there are people who I've seen like, oh, they're trying to turn us all vegan and make us eat bugs. And it's a nuanced thing that I think maybe more nuanced than people try to realize. But either way, the Washington Post is writing about this.
I think that's a
violation. Yeah, well, you wouldn't be vegan, but they're saying like they either want you to be vegan and eat the fake, you know, Bill Gates funded burgers, or they want to fine you for eating meat, and they want to push bugs. And there is truth to these things, and that's the only reason I really want to highlight this, because what the heck is the Washington Post doing pushing this? I guess it's in the health section, right? So they're saying why you should try edible insects. And it tells a story of how on an August morning in southeastern Pennsylvania, adults gathered listening to mealworms sizzling in a hot pan. And it just, I mean, it goes on from there. And it just talks about how it's so cool and it's becoming more trendy. And they have a couple of scientists or somebody quoted, or this CEO of this company, and how it's going to be so great. And it's catching on and marketing is great, taste, blah, blah, blah. But the point is, we're at that point now where the people who are saying that these kinds of things are happening are right. They're right again. They were right again. So
they got the, if you see the image, they got a whole new generation of 7 year olds that looks
showing
like,
to little kids.
Yeah, getting used to it, like getting acclimated to the idea that they're doing their part. If they just suffer through eating this gross, crunchy thing, that, you know, they're not destroying the planet anymore. And I think a lot of people, you know, if they really believed they were destroying the planet or eating a bug, they'd eat the bug. And that's like the situation. That's why controlling the narrative is so dang important to these people, because they want to control you.
I agree. Micah, did you want to hit any of these other econ ones? You know,
I think the IRS one is a good one real quick. IRS,
okay. Let me pull that up.
Because it's been bouncing around. People know it. But check it out. We've been talking for some time about, you know, the bailouts and machinations of the Federal Reserve and the banksters and the interaction between collusion and complicity with the government. Yet, check it out. This agency that's audited by no one, this Alphabet agency that was created the same year as the Federal Reserve. Now, if you get $600 from anywhere or anything, they expect a 1099. Basically, you don't have to report. They need anyone who gives you $600 or more, Venmo, PayPal, eBay, all that stuff, got a gig, getting paid as a band. They want these people to give you a 1099, report that you got this money. So you can imagine eBay's terms of service changed like half a year ago or a year ago because of this. All kinds of terms of service of ways that people would scratch up maybe an extra $550 over the year. I don't want to incriminate anyone, but now they want to get all up in your business with a dome camera and see what's happening. Well, over your $600, just keep that in mind. I mean, come on. Like, I don't know. I get that some people believe taxation isn't theft, but good God, they want it all on you and not on them.
So but the interesting thing about this, and this is definitely not a good move at all for anybody who tries to, including myself and maybe some others, who try to move between different payment systems and avoid whatever you can and just, you know, stay out of people's hands. But you had to put this into connection with the IRS and the recent bill that was passed that's going to bring 83,000 new IRS agents, right? So now they're getting more powers to go after people. They're getting 83,000 new agents. I definitely think that we're seeing a shift towards empowering the IRS in a way that it has probably never been in American history. It's going to be interesting to see where that
goes.
You're
definitely right. And it's really, why at this time? What's happening? I don't really understand it, because this is all during what would, they use this word liberal, but this seems very illiberal administration. If you think about it, why is the little guy getting microscoped over $600? I mean, I don't even know. I mean, that's assuming you think they got a right to any of it to begin with.
Yeah. Well, before we wrap up, I will do one more story. I'm going to do this in 5 minutes or less. I think it's an important one that, again, just like that IRS one, you might have heard other places. Sometimes we like to sit back and really observe a story. Often I'd say observe a story before we just share, because everybody else is talking about it. Like all the topics of the week, you could have heard about a million other places. We want to take time to kind of consume them, see how things develop. And this is one of those situations. So we've talked on this show, Micah, since the beginning about how important it is to grow food. I mean, in Houston, in our activism, we've been involved with community gardens, backyard gardens, front yard gardens, just learning, you know, even whether it was us or just telling people the importance of it and not being so dependent on the big grocery stores or knowing a little bit more about where your food's coming from and all those kinds of things. And I think people get that on a practical, feel-good kind of level. But increasingly, this is like a survival situation that people need to be thinking about. And I'm talking about here what's going on in the Netherlands, which if we remember back over the summer, there were these massive protests taking place. The Dutch farmers were driving their tractors all over and blocking streets, and they were going to government buildings over these new rules about halving nitrogen emissions by 2030. So again, this is part of Agenda 2030, the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, the Great Reset, and there are people pushing back, including the Netherlands. So this is coming from Bloomberg, Netherlands to buy out farmers amid pushback over nitrogen goals. Super short article, but there's really just two key points here. Again, this is all about nitrogen. They're saying this is to reduce emissions. Well, the Dutch government announced that when the nitrogen minister announced that the government will acquire large nitrogen emitters as part of a voluntary and one-time offer, she said in a letter to the parliament in The Hague. The cabinet has set aside 24.3 billion euros to fund the transition. So they're going to offer the biggest nitrogen emitting farms a voluntary one-time offer to buy them out to try to bring things into compliance with European Union rules on reducing nitrogen pollution, which is interesting because over the years, this is one of the things people who have who are maybe more, I don't want to say nationalist, but they believe in their history and their own nation more than they do an organization like the European Union, have said the European Union is going to be used as a way to force certain agendas through. And that's surely what we've seen over the years. And this is just another way. Now these nations are being forced to comply with European rules, European Union rules, not just their nation's rules, but what did the European Union say about how much nitrogen you can have? And that led, again, as I mentioned, to these farmers' protests. The plan from the government is going to require them to cut as much as 95% of emissions in some provinces and see the livestock population in the Netherlands reduced by a third over the next 8 years, which is a pretty massive transition. And this led to all kinds of protests. Now, down here at the bottom, this is interesting, Micah. Prime Minister Mark Rutte said in a press conference on Friday, if not enough farmers sell their businesses, then the government may have to force some of them out of business. Oh, just by the way. So it's a voluntary one-time offer. But by the way, if we can't get people to take that voluntary one-time offer, they may be forced out of business. This is the future for a lot of people. This is the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, Agenda 2030, being forced on the people.
I just don't understand. You know, you've got all this going on. We talk about the Fed for a decade or more now. All we're talking about is force. Yet people don't, people don't turn to freedom as a solution. I mean, every one of these things is about force and control. They're not about, you know, individual choice, how your farm's doing, whether we need to start talking more about what people do with their freedom. And our audience, we'd love to hear those type of stories. My mind has been on it so much more lately. I watched this sort of anthropologist dude talking to different cultures and showing how much humans have in common with his freedom. You know, we started the show talking about in some places you have more freedoms than others. What are you doing with your freedom? Gardening was an example that Derek brought up earlier. I mean, we've got to start showing people that believe in it how freedom is a solution.
I agree.
Market this stuff nonstop like an elite force. We've got to be like that about freedom.
Well, I think that one solution I would say here is it's a good thing that in this case, it might not stop things, but that the farmers have gotten out and have been getting out for the last 6 months and protesting and literally using their farm equipment to block roads and call attention to this. That's one step. But at this point, I mean, yeah, this is people who are trying to grow their own food and some they claim it's the largest nitrogen. But eventually they could come for the smaller farmers, right? And say, oh, well, you're still emitting too much because now we realize we need to lower emissions even lower because what is their goal, Micah? And we've heard it before, a net zero world, right? Net zero. That means anybody emitting nitrogen in this case probably will eventually come, you know, get a voluntary offer before they're forced to have their farm taken away. And we've also reported on stories like this happening in the U.S. and Pennsylvania. These, the Amish farmers that are being forced out because the USDA is claiming that their stuff is not regulation because they do, you know, direct farm to consumer and it's non-GMO. It's it doesn't have any of the antibiotics and all that stuff in it. So this is not just taking place in the Netherlands. I believe we will see and hear more of these stories coming in the next few years, unfortunately, but that is why we do need to be talking about solutions. My solution that I believe in is exiting from these systems as much as possible. In this case, not being dependent on these farms. Is much, you know, even you can't even say in this case, oh, go know the farms, don't depend on the grocery stores because they're going to come shut the farms down if the farms are, you know, emitting nitrogen in any way, which is going to happen if you grow food, if you have soil and it releases nitrogen. So what happens in that case? I don't know the perfect solution. I really do think in some situations, Micah, some people might fight to the death to defend their farm if it's their lifeblood, their livelihood, you know, and they might say, hey, you know what, any government agents trying to come here and take my farm away from me, they will be met with force. And maybe some communities will band together and that they take, you know, but this is something that people need to think about because it's happening. And when that happens, and then it gets harder for people to get food from their grocery store, their usual places or the markets, because the farms are being shut down. You're going to be dependent on that bug protein and that Bill Gates burger that they want you to have.
And it's all you'll be able to afford on your universal basic income anyway.
Yeah, and your digital credit score and your ESG thing, that's all you'll be able to get anyways because you've been labeled a dissident, and so you're only allowed one Bill Gates burger a week.
Like nitrogen's going to quit happening. You know, come on.
Net zero, man. Yeah, we got to get to net zero, carbon zero. I don't know how we do that, but I think there's some ideas.
Someone brought it up in the conversation earlier, like when a tree falls in the forest, does its carbon dioxide not, you know, does it not rot? You know, they didn't say it like that, but they're like, I think they're overlooking this. And I'm like, huh, you know, that's kind of a good point. Like, these are natural forces. Yeah, we've been shaping them in lots of ways. Now we have so many people to feed. Who knows? But yeah, I'm glad to see people standing up. I do expect them to be ridiculed. But you got to be willing to just overlook that stuff. You know, some people kind of got a soft skin or something sometimes. And some people want to be repeaters. Up. So when they hear people, I think that's why they're ridiculed, right? It's not for them. It's for the repeaters. So the repeaters who don't want to be ridiculed don't join with them.
Yeah. Guys, that's it for us tonight. We appreciate you listening. You've been listening to Live Free, Think Free. Find us at thehoustonfreethinkers.com, Spotify, everywhere else. Search Live Free, Think Free. You'll find our archives. And we're going to end with good old Ganesha. See you next week.
Never be the same again.